Tonight, our main speaker is Clancy Ives.
My name is Clancy Imeslund, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very glad to be here tonight, safe and sane and sober. Enjoyed the participation. I know Frank Jones quite well, and he's had a run of bad luck. First good thing he's heard this week was that a prisoner was shot at the Hatchery today. First time the good guys won all week, as far as he knows. But I was listening to the participation tonight in the various stages of recovery and people who are on drugs, go back to drugs, and people got stabbed in a drug deal and people fighting AA and people wanting to keep using and on and on. And they're the natural things you hear all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been hearing them for a lot of years. I see Paul here tonight. Where are you, Paul? Oh, yeah. Not you, dummy. Not you, Paul. The other Paul, the last time I saw him was we were having breakfast in Christchurch, New Zealand, and I'm glad he made it back. The folks down there wanted to keep him. Tim was saying tonight that he was wondering why he was so missed. I'll tell you why, Tim. It's from our book. All of us seek lower companions, and when one doesn't show up, we miss him. But this group and this ethic is notorious for people staying sober here that stay sober nowhere else. They stay sober a lot of places in the world. There are people who are staying sober who never heard of the Pacific group or anything about it. But this group is rather famous in a limited way for people come here to stay sober when they don't stay sober anywhere else. We get people sent to us from other states and other cities. There are several people in this room who have been sent here. Just go out to Los Angeles and go to that group. And some of them have come through the mission where they just sat and or lay and look at the ceiling for a few months while they got it together. That's the kind of employees you have at your central office. They, didn't see you, Harvey. I'm sorry. But you wonder, and it's an amazing thing because I had a great deal of trouble staying sober, too. And I was a high-bottom drunk when I first came to AA, a very young high-bottom drunk. Then for years I was a medium-bottom drunk, up and down. And finally I was a low-bottom drunk on Skid Row with my front teeth kicked out and my clothes and everything I had gone. And at the end of all those years, I was no closer to being sober, staying sober, than I was at my first meeting. Because there was a certain thing that was not present, and that was there was no identification. And these steps, which they kept talking about, really had no application in my life. I drank, and I was in hospitals, and sometimes I drank successfully. That's one of the peculiar things about alcoholics, is that sometimes you get away with it. If you failed every time out, there'd be no question. But sometimes you win. It's like playing Russian roulette. That's the problem. Every time out. And when you're young, you get a lot of empty clicks. As you get older, the shells keep filling up those chambers. And pretty soon you're just looking for an empty click after a boom, boom, boom. There was an empty click in there just a couple of years ago. And one of the great problems that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think a great many people have, is coming here and making the transition. I suppose if there was anything that I've ever known that has kept people out of AA, it is the first three steps of AA. That has kept more people out of AA than anything I know. Not because the steps are bad, but because they are subject to misinterpretation, and everyone can understand what they say and adds an individual perception of them. And I don't suppose that anyone who ever understood those three steps would go out or fail to make the rest of the steps. But the people who fail to understand them have trouble all of in and out, and I did. And those three steps, they sound so simple and they sound, but when you stop and think about it, when you're fighting to maintain some identification, there's a, the first step is kind of a nothing. We admit we're alcoholics and therefore our life is unmanageable. I didn't let it rain on the yard. I don't care what happens now. And the second step gets a little spooky. If you have any sense at all, you're going to come to believe that God is going to make you sane again. Do you really think you're crazy? Would you really admit it? And then you're going to turn your problems over to God, which really is nice. It may be nice for those two nuns I'm sitting between back there, but it doesn't work out here in the real world where you have to struggle for existence. And so I think that, and those three steps, because you know you always hear all the time that you take the first three steps or the first nine steps, and then that's the end of that, and the rest is just maintenance, the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I've discovered in my life that time after time I've had to return to the first three steps because they put everything in perspective again. You hear it a lot of times. And there, tonight I was listening during the participation. Don with his 15 years and this young girl with 9 years who at 6 months got crazy. There seem to be phases in sobriety where you get crazy. Sometimes it's 3 months. Sometimes it's 6 months. 6 months is a very common one because that's when we usually have people write inventories because they're crazy at 6 months. You've been sober and now it's all worn off. 9 months. And 1 year of sobriety, after your first birthday, there's a terrible letdown and a terrible change in perception, and people get digging. And there's a great change right after the fifth birthday. But more people leave AA after the fifth birthday, old-timers, than any other time. And there's a great change after the 10th birthday, and the 15th, and the 20th. And the reason for that, of course, is because we live in a decimal-oriented society. And sounds funny, but it isn't. 5 means something. To have 5 years means something. 4 years doesn't mean much. 6 years doesn't mean much. But 5 years. That's why you have birthdays for people with 5 years, because that's special. And 10 years. In the decimal orders. And a lot of people, Chuck Chamberlain said the toughest year of his sobriety was his 11th year. Toughest year of my sobriety is my 11th year. Don't know why. It's just that you get a terrible dose of rights, and you've been sober a long time, and it's just, you're not being treated right for the amount of sobriety you have somehow. And it's funny, except it drives people crazy and kills them. You can get crazy other times. But I think if you understand the first, I'm going to just for a few minutes talk about the first three steps, because it may help the newcomer and may help people like Don Newcomb and I to remember what we have to do on a continuing basis. Because AA is as much for the old timer as it is for the newcomer. The first step seemed like a simple step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and therefore our lives had become unmanageable. And it doesn't say that at all. Everybody thinks what it says, but it doesn't say that. Entirely different. It says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Now, most people conceive that to mean we admitted we were drunk all the time, or we could never handle alcohol, or we drank incessantly, or we lost everything. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means you have to admit when you're new is that for some reason that you can't understand, you are no longer able to control your behavior when you drink. You can control it sometimes, but you can't control it other times. So in all intents and purposes, it's powerless. As you stay sober longer and you stay around AA, you understand why you are powerless. Because the physical aspect of alcoholism is that alcohol has a special effect on 6% of the people who drink. And it always has throughout history. They talk about alcoholics in Egypt. They talk about alcoholics in the Bible. They talk about alcoholics in ancient Greece. The other day we were looking at some books in my garage. It shows a picture of a doctor addressing a group of French alcoholics in 1903. And there's a bunch of guys in vertical boxes, just the faces there. That's because they couldn't let them out. They thought they were insane. But that's the way. But no one understands why do they get this way. Why? There's a special effect. People sometimes think it's because you've been in jail. That's the special effect. Or you go, makes you crazy. It's an effect that you cannot measure if you're an alcoholic. You have no way of knowing it. And you have to come here and stay sober a while to find out what it is. And that is, alcohol does something special for some people that it doesn't do for most people. It almost instantly makes the world look different. Now, you and I'm sure if you're like me, you go through life thinking it does that for everybody. But it doesn't. It doesn't do that for everybody. It's an old analogy or description why, but I don't know a better way to put it. When I was about almost a year sober, I had a little job finally. I'd moved out of the abandoned car I was living in. I still didn't have any front teeth. I was desperate straits, but I had a job in an advertising agency. The same kind of job I'd had when I was 14. And one of our accounts was something called Kamchatka Vodka. And they used to have these billboards, they still do, but they used to have them all over it, and they had the same slogan on those things for 15 years. It was old before I got working on it. It said, vodka is pronounced Kamchatka. And my job there was wrapping packages. And I'd had more experience than my boss and his boss and the guys creating these boards. But I didn't make a difference of what I had for experience. That was the best job I could get. And one day they were laying out a new billboard, different colors, different styles, still the same slogan. And I thought, I'm going to make my move today. And I'm going to tell them, I'm going to give them an idea that's going, they're going to just say, who is that guy? And I came back with my packages. I said, say, I know it's not my job, but I got an idea for you. How about Kamchatka vodka goes boom, better than all vodkas everywhere. I looked at these guys, they looked at me, same look I've been getting all my life, just. This one guy said, you know, you've got a smart mouth. Everybody in this agency is getting a little tired of your smart mouth. The other guy said, if you don't like the way we're setting up these ads, why don't you go work somewhere else? Give someone else the benefit of your experience. And you know, there's nothing in the world for sensitive, insecure people than public humiliation. There is nothing worse. If you had a gun, you could kill him. I really would have killed somebody if I had a gun. And they were just a little sneered at me. And I had a very intimidating sponsor. And that's the only thing that saved them, because I would have jumped the table and kicked him in the face, except I didn't know how to ever explain it to my sponsor. So I just grabbed my packages and I left, and tears of rage. And that, I was going to run away, but I didn't. And that I rubbed to my sponsor to meet him. Bob! Shut up! For Christ's sake, if you can't be a man, act like one. I hate to be intimidated. Oh, I love to intimidate, however. Isn't that funny? He said, no, what the hell is it now? I said, Bob, let me tell you. I told him this whole story. You know, they publicly humiliate me. I don't care. They use the damn slogan, but they treat me like a piece of crap, Bob. They're just putting me down. They don't care what I say. They're just putting me down. He said, listen. I've been telling you this for a year now. Can't you get through your head? When he got upset, he'd wave his finger under my nose. And it's the only time I ever really missed my front teeth. And but I wasn't going to give him the pleasure of gumming it. He said, listen, they're not putting you down. Can't you get this through your head? They don't know what the hell you're talking about over there. I've been telling you this. Kamchatka vodka doesn't go boom to them. To them it goes blah, blah, blah. That's why you're in this goddamn meeting and they're not. I could have told you that. But you might think about that sometime. That's what makes the alcoholic. Something has to go boom. You think, maybe a lot of people think, maybe I'm just a severe social drinker. Would you want to be a social drinker? Would anybody here, could you have stood to be a social drinker, go through life Have your back to the wall, hounds of fate ripping at your throat. Take a drink.
Oh, God, I can't.
Never go. They will never know what you and I take for granted. The hounds of fate at your throat. And it doesn't go. Bring on your goddamn hound, Mrs. Baskerville. But if it does that for you, it has a bad... It's a, one bad thing about it. It, in a sense, stops your emotional growth. Most people have to work through emotional pain and find solutions. When you have yourself a way to rid yourself of emotional pain, you need never find solutions. That's why they say, and it's really not exactly true, but it's true enough, that your emotional growth stops when alcohol begins working for you. That's why gray-haired people can sober up and find themselves with the emotions of 16-year-olds. Because in a residual sense, there's a certain thing. All you have to admit in the first half of the first step is that I've lost my power to control my drinking. That's all it means. As my sponsor told me many times, just take the black parts of the page. Don't interpret them. Just do what it says. You got to admit your problem with drinking. Now, there'd be, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that problem. If you didn't admit that problem. You might not think you're a real alcoholic, but nothing in the first step says you have to admit you're a real alcoholic. Nothing in the first step says you have to understand the nature of your illness. It says you have to admit that you're having a problem with your drinking. And therefore, my life is unmanageable? Not at all. As a guy told me one time, he said, you're supposed to be a big hotshot writer, kid. Don't you ever read? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Dash. Not therefore. And dash in the English language means end of thought, beginning of new thought. I have to admit that I'm powerless over alcohol, and also that my sober life is unmanageable. Now, it is not because I'm drunk sometimes. If it was because I was drunk sometimes, I wouldn't get drunk. That's the other end of this negative thing. When you're new, all you have to admit is, my life is screwed up. If you stay here a while, you understand why, but it won't make any difference. Once you admit it's screwed up, you know all you need to know. Because all you have to find out that if alcohol works for you, it little by little destroys your ability to cope with sustained reality. The curse of the disease of alcoholism is not that you can't stop drinking, that you can't get off booze, that you can't take vows with or without a solemn oath, that you can't do all the things in chapter 3. The curse of alcoholism is you will discover sooner or later that stopping drinking has no significant effect on your life except to gradually make it so painful that you can't stand it. And one day you must find relief. And for people like you and me, we get a special relief that no one else gets. And our friends wonder why we drink, and we wonder why they don't. But all you got to admit in the first step, don't make it a big deal. You and I are here. If either one of those two characteristics weren't true, we wouldn't be here. If my life was okay when I didn't drink, I wouldn't go to AA. Or if I could drink successfully, I wouldn't go to AA. But if neither one of them are here, you have to do something. Or join the vast majority, the 95% of people who keep trying to control it till they die from it. It's a very small group of people who stay sober in AA. Not because AA doesn't work, but because a great many people come here and get sober and wonder why they don't feel good and think AA doesn't work. And another group starts to feel good and think they no longer need it. And a vast majority of people never come to AA at all because their perception of themselves does not seem to be, they're not alcoholics, because their problems are real and they happen when they're sober. So, big deal. Big deal, the first step. I got to admit that I can't drink successfully, and of myself, I cannot stay sober successfully, especially when I'm drinking intermittently. That's all. Nothing debatable in that step. nothing to debate about. If those characteristics weren't with you, you would not be sitting here. The only thing you can debate is whether or not you drank as much as you think someone else did, or whether you did as many crazy things as someone else did. That has nothing to do with it. That's podium flash. All it boils down to is, can I drink, and can I stand as I stay sober by myself? Apparently not. Now, you get a little spooky in that second step, because you got to return to God. Now, if you are like me, I had a very, very strong religious education. I was raised in a very, very strict religion. And I, at an early age, knew I was a sinner, and it wasn't long before I knew I was ready to go to hell. And by the time I was grown up, I was convinced I was going to go to hell, if that God existed. So, like some people, many alcoholics do it, I did it. I became an agnostic and hopefully an atheist. Because if God doesn't exist, he won't punish you. And I could sit around in my drinking days with other pseudo-intellectual pukes on porches and give, if God exists, let him strike me dead. If God exists, why does Lucky Luciano live with broads and dope and dough in Firenze, Italy, and a few miles away, the Pope, God's vicar on earth, dies screaming with agony from cancer? Is that how God rewards his people? If God lives, why does Louis Lepke Buckhalter live in New York with comfort while outside of his estate, a train hits a school bus full of nuns and students and leaves them strewn along the tracks for a mile? Is that God in action? I can prove God doesn't exist. But when you're tired and sick and desperate and late at night, it all comes back. God's going to put me to hell. You got to start building it all up again. And I remember telling my sponsor, because I've gone to, one of the things that I always hate about AA, they're always grinding your face in that God. And that may be all right for good people who drank too much, but not for sinners who have sinned by thought, word, and deed every day that they can remember. And I remember telling my sponsor, I cannot return to God. Came up after a discussion meeting at this little club where I was living in the parking lot. And some old lady came up to me and said, we were talking about the second step. And I gave something. After returning to God, that's... She said, oh, Sonny, we hate to see you fight God. Just hate to see you fight God. That's all I could do to keep from saying, well, ma'am, you'll never see me fight God again. Now you can hear me fight God for a while. And my sponsor got on me about that. I said, I cannot return to God. And he had to point out to me. And I've been around 8, 9 years by this time. And I've read the book and I met Bill Wilson and done all sorts of things. And he said, nothing in AA ever says you return to anything. Get that out of your mind. You never return to anything. There's only one sentence in the book that talks about returning. It says, perhaps some people want to return to normal living. But you wouldn't want to do that either. What's that supposed to mean? I didn't actually say it, but I thought it, Adam. He said, you got to come to believe in something. If everything is new. You got to start changing your perception. You got to come to believe in something. You got to come to believe in a power greater than yourself. Oh, really? Well, I bet that really fools a lot of people. You don't have to worry about God, just a power greater than yourself. Isn't that cute? You know, that fools a lot of people. He says, don't you believe in God? No. He says, you believe in A? No. He says, you think I'm doing better than you are? I guess you are. He says, congratulations, I'm your new higher power. And he became my higher power. A lot of people said to me, you can't have a human being for your higher power. People at Shaw's meet, always the back row meetings, and all know everything except how to take care of themselves. But I'll tell you something. I would rather see any newcomer believe in his sponsor as a higher power than to pretend to believe in a God you don't believe in. Because sometimes you can look good at the podium and say, through God, this wonderful program, I no longer drink it. This wonderful. Mm-hmm. But it's 2 o'clock in the morning. If you've been shucking them, you're all alone and you're screwed, I'll tell you. Because the walls come in and there you are. You better believe in something. You got to come to believe in something. If you're a sponsor, great to have it. I've always believed that God speaks to people through sponsors. That's what sponsors are for. And if you follow, it is my experience, if you follow bad advice from your sponsor, but follow it with a good intention, you'll be all right. You'll stay sober much better than debating each piece of information you get. That's what will kill you. But I, because the sponsor that saved my life, I did things that he told me to do, that he intimidated me into doing, that now I would not have people do. And I don't know if they were good things. But I believed in him and I did them. And I survived. And he didn't do them, and he died drunk after many years of sobriety. So it tells you something. Came to believe in a power greater than myself, but then he gets those people. Going to do what? Restore me to sanity. What the hell does that mean? Living a perpetual serenity? You know, sometimes if you're new, you think old-timers get real serenity. I'll tell you, I think maybe you could get it. But I've never met anyone in AA who could stand serenity more than 2 days. It's just the end of 2 days of serenity, that's no good. Your offhand just instinctively starts stirring this. Look what attacked me. See, we need a little action, too, from time to time. Non-lethal action, hopefully. But what is sanity? You can read 6 books on the mind, and you will get 6 different definitions of sanity. Sanity is absolutely impossible to specifically define, but oddly enough, you can define insanity, but you can't define sanity. Insanity just went through a series of introspections or brain damage. We're not talking about brain damage, we're talking about emotional insanity, psychosis. When your brain, under sufficient conflict, will, in a last gasp effort, attempt to make things all right, make reality look different than it is in order to reduce the conflict. And, you know, that's what happened. You think about psychosis. Psychosis is things like paranoia. I don't like things, but I know why they're this way, because they're all against me and trying to kill me. Reduces the question why. I now know what they're doing. Schizophrenia, where I no longer have to worry about why, because I stay in this personality until I can't stand it, and then I become this personality until I can't stand it, and I become this personality, and on the whole variety of psychosis. What we sometimes think of insanity around here is really neurosis. Neurosis is when you feel bad, when you're psychotic. You don't think you're psychotic. You think they are psychotic. When you're neurotic, you think I am psychotic. True story. Now, how are they going to restore me to sanity? Very few alcoholics ever become psychotic. The cases of alcoholics ever becoming truly psychotic is as limited in the sense of psychosis. In alcoholic insanity, they talk about, is brain damage. That is where, when you drink enough, you lose your ability to function. I see them all day downtown on their way to being sent somewhere where they spend the rest of their life sitting there while people come and change their diapers. That's what alcoholic insanity is. You just sit there. You don't sit in a meeting wondering why you feel so bad. It's when your mind is... Alcoholic insanity is almost the same as syphilitic insanity. Except syphilitic insanity will kill you. An alcoholic insanity will let you stay in that condition for 40 years and never know your name. Irreversible. Insanity, psychosis, is when reality has had to be changed in order to become bearable to my mind. What is the effect? Why don't alcoholics become psychotic? The cases of alcoholics becoming psychotic are scarce as hen teeth. Why? Because when it gets bad enough, long enough, although they don't know it, they can induce temporary psychosis. I can make reality look different. Very few people can do that. Heroin, people take heroin for that purpose, but they can't sustain it because it isn't very long you're on heroin that you're ODing, you're taking too much. Cocaine gets you way up, and they talk about cocaine, but that gets you paranoid after a while and holes in your nose and crazy. It's a triple upper. But alcohol, just if, as long as it continues to work, keeps you in the middle with a changed perception. And reality without it is full of pain and anxiety and depression and restlessness and feeling different and feeling not part of and knowing your case is different and knowing you don't understand and staying sober doesn't help it and makes it worse little by little. So, I think an argument could be made very easily. That's what I've always had to believe. Somehow you've got to come to believe here. You don't have to understand how it's going to be done. You don't even have to try this. You have to make a hypothesis like a scientist. I'm going to come to believe that somehow, some power greater than myself, that I don't even know what it is, maybe my sponsor and his friends, or maybe AA somehow, or maybe God, if I can believe in that, but something. I've got to come to believe that something will change my life sufficiently enough so I will not have to induce psychosis to stand it. I have to come to believe that a power greater than myself will restore me to sanity. That's all it means. A lot of people have trouble with that. They say, how is it going to be done? You don't have to worry now about how it's going to be done. You just have to remember that it will happen because it's happened to 1.5 million people who are so similar to you that you someday will never believe it. I was down in, Paul, remember, I was speaking at a meeting in New Zealand. And there were some young guys there, and they're all feeling real different. And I told them something, and they laughed. I don't think they ever did understand it, but it's true. I told them I'd never seen them before, never heard of them, but I knew more about them than I knew about my children. And I know more about any alcoholic in this room than I know about my children. Not on a superficial level, but on a deeper level. Because all you have to wonder about you, just have to look at me. And be around here long enough to identify what's the universal things. My children, I know a lot about them. I know there's externals, but I don't know their internals really. No parent does. But I know your internals. Don't know your externals, but I know your internals. Funny thing. What you got to do then? I can't drink, and I can't stay sober. There is no agency known to mankind that will reverse my ability to change my perception of while drinking. How could I become a non-alcoholic? I cannot. There's an old corny cliche, and it sounds so cute it almost makes you want to puke, but it's true. It is for an alcoholic to become returned to a social drinker is like a pickle trying to get back to be a cucumber. Once you've crossed the pickle line, that's the end of it. Now, nothing debatable there. You can't drink, you can't stay sober. You got to somehow have some hope that there's something here that'll help you stay sober. And if you didn't have that hope, you wouldn't be here. Your brain may fight you, say, what it is, that let's leave, or I'm not sure this is the answer. The fact that you're here is the evidence that at least for the moment you have that belief or are looking for it. Now, to turn your problem over to God, to turn your life over to God, that is just too difficult. Because that doesn't work. It may work for a little while, but I'll tell you something. You will notice early on that when you get crazy, God's will gets crazy. It's a funny coincidence. I remember God telling me to quit my job once and punch a guy on the way out. Thy will be done, Father. You know. Later on, I wasn't so sure that was God's will. God made a G just the same way I did. Why do you turn your will and life over? You know, there's all sorts of things. That old corny cliche, you know. And I remember years ago, I got about $100 in hot checks out. I told a group in my slipping days, and they're going to garnish my wages if I don't make those checks good by Monday. What'll I do? So they said, well, son, try this. Turn those bad checks over to your higher power and see what happens. Okay. And I did. And my higher power turned them over to Sheriff Peter Pitches. Yeah. When I was new, I just wanted to puke sitting in meetings and hearing people get up and say, I was 3 months behind in my rent. And I took it to my higher power in prayer. And the next day, an insurance check found me and just covered those 3 months' rent. And I knew the program worked. I got evicted myself. One of the classic stories of all time I remember listening to, a guy in a meeting a long time ago said, I was in a club car on this train. I was having a drink, and as almost a voice said, return to your car. And I did. And shortly thereafter, the club car derailed, and 7 people in there were killed. And I knew that God was teaching me, will you stop that? If you leave your shoes on, you wouldn't sneeze all the time. He said, God was teaching me a significant lesson. And I thought to myself, that isn't the impression I get. You know, isn't that a bit much? God killed 7 people, so you will learn that in a few years you should go to AA. What is God teaching those poor bastards in the bar car? Now, if you don't mind dying, you'll go to AA someday because of this. This is your last warning, Rennie. Incidentally, Tim, I just want to put this in here now. I was thinking about it earlier. Tim was mentioning driving down the freeway, thinking about himself, seeking himself. Do that about 2 more weeks. Try to remember what his face looks like. You won't see it after that. But, you know, think of what it is to be an Oriental woman driver. Do you know the last thing an Oriental woman driver sees when she gets off the freeway? Well, let's get back to the spiritual side of this program. You got to turn your life over to the care of God as you understand it. Now, I think, since that's the third step, you have to assume that whatever higher power you accepted in the second step is God as you understood him in the third step. So what you're saying is, I can't stay drunk. I can't stay sober. Maybe there's some power here that'll restore me to being able to live in sobriety, although I can't conceive what it'll do, how it can do it. And thirdly, I will try to do what they say. If your higher power is a sponsor, I will do what my sponsor says. If my higher power is AA and my sponsor, I will do what they say. If my higher power is God, that's great. But be very careful. Check out his messages with your sponsor. True story. They have homes all. I've been flown across the country several times to talk at groups of clergymen where they've sent from all over the world who believe implicitly in God and weep in frustration because they can't stay sober. And AA members teach them how to take these steps so they can go back to their parishes throughout the Western world and love God and stay sober. Now, if clergymen cannot establish that, I don't think you and I can, because you have to be very careful. Self-obsessed, tricky minds play terrible games on you. You can think, I'm doing God's will, and I now see it clearly. God wants me to stop doing all that AA crap and to meditate and all this baloney. This is the only thing that works. Somehow you've got to make a decision that you're going to do what they say. There's a third step prayer that you can kneel and say and talk to God, but you can say God as you understand him You're praying. You can pray to your sponsor, or you can pray to AA, or you can pray to whatever power is out there. But you're praying you're going to turn your life over to do with as you will. Now, what is His will for me? It turns out to be writing an inventory when I don't want to write an inventory, put in things I'd rather leave out, read them to someone who I don't want to read to because I'm afraid they'll divulge my secret somehow, make an effort to become willing to have God remove all these defects. Not that He will, but I can make an effort to work on them as long as I live and ask Him to do it and make amends to people that I don't even want to make amends to, but the power chain says you do that. And I little by little find out, as we were saying in that step meeting last night, the purpose of AA is not to make you good. The purpose of AA is not to make you holy. The purpose of AA is not to make you perfect. The purpose of AA is, oddly enough, over a long period of time, to make you more and more comfortable so you don't have to drink to stand it. Doing the things that AA talks about is not a holy crusade. It really is an exercise in concealed self-indulgence. You are really doing things for yourself. They're not for the people you're doing them. The amends are not for the people I'm making them to. The amends are for me because it little by little alters my perception of reality. It turns out that the purpose of AA is to little by little do what alcohol does quickly. To little by little alter the way things look. The same facts look differently. To alter, I remember thinking, I was sober 3 years before I could conceive to order a gravestone for my son's grave that had died many years before, but I'd been in jail when he died, and I could never bear to think about his death. When I was sober a while, I went to Wisconsin, got my dad, got my father-in-law. We went down, didn't feel happy, but we didn't feel terribly sad, put a nice gravestone, felt requited, and went away. I mean, I swore I'd never do. Now, what are the steps? Where are the steps that you'll be able to put gravestone on your son's grave? Doesn't say that. But things will look different. But also, no matter how hard you worked, got my father-in-law, we went down, didn't feel happy, but we didn't feel terribly sad, put a nice gravestone, felt requited, and went away. Something I swore I'd never do. Now, what are the steps? Where's the steps that you'll be able to put a rise above human being? And as you go along in life, all sorts of forces work on you. And your mind would like to have you tell you, you shouldn't have to do this anymore. You've been sober X years, or X months, or 5 years. You should have more respect. Or 10 years, people aren't treating you right. Or 20 years. All of these decimal things. Or you get mad at people and think, I'm not getting my... I've been very successful. As most of you know, I work at the Mission now, but I've been successful in radio and television in this town. And I've been successful in advertising agencies and corporations. I've become quite successful. That's all you need. A healthy family and successful and everything's fine. But always inside of me is that alcoholic seeking an easier, softer way, way down deep, if I let it go unattended. And every so often I have to, and Don Newcomb has to, and everybody else has to. When things just get out of whack, and people are acting crazy, and I'm not getting my rights, and God damn it, I want things to be different. I got to stop and think, hey, what are the important facts I have to know? I cannot drink. And I, of myself, cannot stay sober. And now sobriety is getting out of whack. I have to, again, remember that there's a power greater than me that will enable me to live more comfortably, even though my rights would tell me I shouldn't have to do those things anymore. And what I better do is do those things, not explain why at my level of achievement I no longer have to do them. Those three steps are just like a trampoline. As you go through life, things get screwy, take a bounce off them, and all of a sudden it all gets simple again. I don't have to worry about that promotion or what that woman said to me or whether or not my check is right or how dare they do that to me. All I have to remember is when I keep things simple, I am living more comfortably, probably, than 99 9/10% of alcoholics in the world. That's a pretty good shot. I'm lucky to be in a group that is activity and action-oriented. And we do actions here. And that's why this group keeps people sober. The other groups, where they say, do what you think is right for you, makes them die. Because doing what I think is too variable. I have to have a structure. In a few months, if I remember these things, it'll be 30 years since I had a drink. And the best psychiatrist, one of the best psychiatrists in America, told me that no matter what I would do in my life, I would always have to have some form of medication because of the intensity of my emotions. And I haven't had a medication in my body for 29 years and a half. Now, you can debate whether or not what I'm saying is true, or you can debate, does AA really work? But you can't debate the fact that I'm standing here 29 and a half years sober. And I was a bad, on the edge of psychosis, suicidal, crazy, lost, afraid, God-hating, non-alcoholic, just badly, badly broken inside, I felt. And today I walk with some degree of dignity and play little games. God, here I'm 60 years old playing little games all day today. And I thought, that would never be. I was too old to do that when I was 30. And now I figure I got 15 years the way the others are playing. But that's the net result of all of this. Somehow, when I do these things, when I go to the meetings, when I make myself available to others, when I take the actions in my fallible, weak way with all my problems, the world becomes a place that is not frightening or threatening or dangerous. It becomes a place that I can walk with some degree of dignity. You don't have to wait till you're 30 years to get that feeling. I had that feeling in my second year. Comes and goes, comes and goes. All that ever happens is you get a higher percentage. I have it maybe 75% of the time now, which is pretty good for a human being. When you're new, you get it for 5% or 10%. All you do is increase the percentage as you stay here. You don't become wonderful. You just increase the percentage of comfort. And that's why we do these things. That's why I'm glad to be safe and sane and sober tonight. I'm glad that a lot of this room was filled with people 25 years ago that saved my life and other lives. And I think that 25 years from now it'll be full of people who have never heard of me. But for tonight, I am one. I am part. I am sober. I am sane. I am confident, and I thank you.